he took the two strike in there, and subsequently the ground crews went in and found 20 enemy killed, members of that civilian headquarters. This operation is going to continue until 1 July, and it will simply be a methodical sweeping out of the overall area. And in that sense, it's gone very well. The casualty ratio has been almost, exactly. We've had 198 to 1804. And it will continue, as I say, on to 1 July. And the operation in which everyone is most interested in, we call Lamson 719, which is being conducted here in the general area just south of the DNC and into Laos, the strike of the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And I'll describe that in more detail. Black line coming 11 maneuver battalions, and then they had four battalions in here that they could take either way. Subsequent to that time, as Mr. Allen described, they have brought in additional forces in the day. In the overall area here, we estimate they have about 28,000. So faced with that problem, we have the General Abrams and Brad, I should say, with working with General Bent, his officers down there, and the commanders, General Lamb and General Sullivan, have come up with a plan which does not change the concept at all, but it does redeploy forces and beef up the weak spots. And this plan will work as follows. It's already, action is being taken to get it underway now. The plan envisions replacing the airborne forces, which are the ones that have been in the heavy fights up to the north, with the Marines, with six battalions of Marines. The Marines have more staying power and more firepower, and can hold this hot spot that's right in this general area here. At the same time, we will bring up from the south, which has been there all the time, the Marine Brigade, which had been held in strategic reserve, and it will be put up closer to the action instead of being kept down to the south. This will take place in the next couple of days. Also, where we had blocking forces here on the DMZ by the 5th Mechanized here and the 2nd Infantry Regiment of the 1st Division of the South Vietnamese here, this regiment is going to be moved down here and put in readiness or left into this general area at the propitious time. And this action here, this area here, will be taken over by the U.S. Forces, which they can handle all right. In addition to that, there will be the 1st Regiment of the 1st Division here and the 3rd Regiment of the 1st Division here going along this ridge. This 1st Regiment will go astride Highway 94, which is the key highway which they must use now that 92 has been blocked. And so this regiment will move along there right down this road. And the idea is to continue this movement to the west. Now this morning I got a message from General Abrams, just giving me a general wrap-up, which I've asked him to do every Friday so I can pass it on to the President. And he makes the following observations. One is that the leadership of the Oregon Airborne needs improving a bit. They have had two sharp fights, you know. One, the 39th Battalion. The other, the F-5 Support Base 31, which is being reported in the press at the moment. But nevertheless, in each case, the losses on the other side have been much greater than those that have been suffered by the South Vietnamese. But he thinks when these Marines go in here and replace the airborne, which are relatively lightly armed, that this area here will be significantly strengthened. He turns to then talks about the commander of the 1st Oregon Division, General Fu, who he says is just outstanding, that he is he's aggressive, he has control of the situation, and he's moving ahead with vigor along this line. He pointed out, I know General, Mr. Kitchener would be interested in General Abrams' statement about this, where he said that General Fu had been very skillfully using the B-52s. He had a battalion on this road, 914. He pulled it out, and the and then late on 1 hour before the attack that he knew was coming against him, they laid on B-52s, he went back in there and found 159 bodies along 914 now. And so he is using that accordion-type tactic. When he thinks that he's just about to get attacked, he'll move out and call in the B-52s and move back in. And during the forthcoming days and weeks, I think you will see more hard fighting, but more progress along this line. And there's no question in my mind about the fact that this is having a serious impact, a very serious impact, on the efforts that the North Vietnamese are making to bring their forces down in this direction. This orange line shows the phase 3 of the operation, which has been in effect. base areas that the South or North Vietnamese have, and is a base area, of course, that they used when they made the heavy attack on Hue during Tet in 1968. Now, if I may, sir, I'd like to turn over here and talk a little bit about logistics, because that's the prime subject, and I have some comments generally on that. These blue line, here is Highway 9. This is Highway 925, which is goes on down towards Quezon, and this is Highway 92, which crosses the Highway 9 at 90 degrees and comes on down into this point. Now, there's and incidentally, this is a pipeline, which you have undoubtedly read something about, that comes all the way down to this point. I might just digress a moment to say that the pipeline is a 4-inch line. It will pump about 1,500 gallons a minute. It has quick detachable joints so that if it's bombed, they can quickly insert the replacements. It has booster pumps on trucks so they can drive these trucks up and down this line and plug them in to boost the pressure. And it also has spurs on it. In other words, it's not just a simple line. It has little spurs coming out to various places. For instance, one of the very important places here where they fuel, we know this is a fuel depot is right here where it crosses 914, which is the alternate route to 92 coming out of the Chupon area down here. And we know when we get there, we probably find other activity because they must have to refuel right at that point. This pipeline now has been cut in many places. It's been cut by ground troops. It's been cut by machine gun fire from the air. It's been on fire in several places, both north and south of Highway 9. This means that they're going to have to truck the fuel down now rather than send it down by pipeline, and this will absorb more of their transportation capacity.
And Tom, you might point out, too, that they've been trucking the fuel at the end of that pipeline down into Cambodia and other areas at the end of the pipeline.
Yes, sir. This is the end of the pipeline. And as the Secretary of Land says, from then on, they must truck it down. Now they've got to truck it from up in here someplace. And I think that will have a significant effect. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about this flow of trucks, because we discussed this last evening with General Clay, who is responsible for targeting all the various roads and for analyzing the census that are positioned along these roads. Perhaps I should say to Ambassador Bush that these red lines mark the location of the electronic census, which will indicate when a truck or a tank or a large vehicle passes by. And these are read out back in the central base, and then we count the number of times that a vehicle has gone by moving to the south, and the number of times that a vehicle has gone by moving to the north. And it's from these sensors that we get the information as to the quantity of traffic on a particular road. Now, turning back to 914, which is a key artery in question here, and talking to, go right here, and there's a bypass going around it called 914C. Talking to General Clay about this, he says that they are fairly confident that they know that 914C, which is a bypass, is not truckable in a practical way, and they have been concentrating on 914 going down here. Now, he also points out that he now has instructions to stay clear of the southern part of this road because there are friendly troops on the road. So as no longer is he bombing 914 south of this dividing at this point right here because of the presence of friendly troops. And that this is the road that I told you on this other chart that the 1st Regiment is going to drive up astride 914. And apparently that is now a bomb-free area because of this operation that I described to you. And looking at the northern part of this road, which goes on up into the Chipotle area, I think it's interesting to note the traffic that's taking place on that road. So far as 914 is concerned, you can see it's from truck traffic down that road has never exceeded over 9 a day, and we've had interdictions, road cuts, and so we don't feel that this road is actually taken over yet. Furthermore, as you get further south on this road, there is no road under enemy control which will permit them to shift back over to the extension of this road leading to the south. And so from the intercept we have, and from the position of the troops, from the sensor readings and so on, I think that the operation in general here is beginning to show up in the movement of the vehicles to the south. We do, we have further south here, there were 14 vehicles destroyed last evening by the gunships, and there will be some traffic south, because what they really do, they don't start in Haiphong and drive all the way down to Cambodia. They have, in between these bend trams, they have assigned a group of trucks and they shuttle back and forth. On the census, we normally get just about the same numbers going north each night as the numbers going south, like the Pony Express.
Yeah, so we've got some areas there where they can put the thing through on the ground without the use of trucks, and then they pick up the trucks lower down because of the kind of loop they're using in there, too.
Yes, sir. I think that's a good point, because that shows why they have such a large number of porters and support forces, or whatever you want to call them, because they do manhandle this material all the time. In between these so-called bend trams. Also, General Abrams noted that the his view that the traffic which has been shown up on the census along this road here in the last week or so, a lot of it is troop supplies. In other words, it's just they have a regiment down in here, and a lot of the supplies that this trucking has been going back and forth is not only indicates they have to force the supplies through, but also they have to supply their own forces right in this area, because he does expect some action as they move on down here. So I would just summarize by saying that on balance, we feel we've had a very significant effect on the capability to push the supply south, that we're going to have, we know, some hard fighting ahead for the South Vietnamese. We know that they're going to suffer losses. We have not yet been able to determine the overall effect of the air attacks on the enemy forces. For instance, we do know that in this first operation with the 39th Battalion, where there was a pullback and we lost 100 or so, the South Vietnamese lost 100 or so, plus several wounded, to the point where they have moved that 39th Battalion back into South Vietnam now to refurbish it. But nevertheless, the four different attack aircraft counted 639 of the enemy in the area. And this is not just a one-sided proposition. They're being very heavily punished.
And now, on that point, somebody said that we had some pictures that we take from the gunships showing that. It occurred to me that if we do have the pictures, that we ought to at least publish them in Saigon, because even if we win a battle in terms of casualties, we lose it in terms of public opinion.
I'm asking though, that I think that's a good idea, though.
Those pictures are available in Saigon.
Yeah, but I think they've got them.
We give them to the news services, and of course they say, well, goddamn it, we don't want any of your Defense Department pictures. We want to take them ourselves.
How about you? For the South Vietnamese. Well, I mean, we lose 125, they lose 600, and they retreat, and we retreat, and everybody says the South Vietnamese lost the battle. And apparently, we do have pictures which are pretty dramatic.
Right, and they didn't use the press in Saigon.
And they didn't use
them? That's happened before.
Well, you'll try it again.
We will.
All right. Now, just in broad terms, I'd like to just to give you a feel for the overall threat. We estimate that south of 19 degrees, which is, of course, well north on this chart, the area of showing, and that first enemy was a terrific burden on them with respect to trying to replace and refurbish those forces. And any time you destroy the forces in this area, then it is just that less a threat to our own forces than the South Vietnamese forces in South Vietnam proper. So all of this is a package, I think, contributes to the overall objective we have. And Secretary Land has said many times that the South Vietnamese are not going to win every battle. They aren't. And it's going to be some of the toughest fighting that they've had is going to be right in this area. And they recognize this when they went in. And they are willing to accept this risk in order to get the long-range benefits that will accrue from this operation.
I realize how difficult this is, but is there any way we can keep our men off television right after battle? You know, we would never appear to have won a war if we had our people right after they returned from battle. They're all scared as hell. They all remember the casualties of friends being killed and everything. And God, you listen to television at night and just, it's horrifying. Everyone who explains how his buddies have all been killed. This is the worst fighting he's had, and so forth. And, even if we could wait a few days until they calm down a little. Is there any way to...
Well, as we have the... There aren't any reporters out there. And they're riding around in the helos and so on. And they catch one of these youngsters as he steps out of the helo, and he says this is the hardest fighting in the South Vietnamese War. He's been there 1 month or so. So he's comparing it.
We had rules in World War II that they couldn't do that until they got permission.
Well, I watch the films that are on all the networks each night. I mean, I keep track of where the interviews are taking place. In almost all of the interviews, bad interviews we've had are at the base camps where we had 100-150 newspaper people.
In North Vietnam. South Vietnam.
In South Vietnam. And they're in the base camp areas. I don't know what we can do to keep those people busy around the base camp areas. Abrams is going to try to take them out now once in a while on tours around, because that's much better to get them out of that base camp area. Because but you've got so darn many of them, and you can't, if we can set up a pool arrangement.
Can't the skipper of the unit those tell them beforehand, look at, let's not be in
well,
any of us,
recreational facilities. Most of them are interviewed, you know, as they're the guys waiting over there, and you can't
realize it.
They're over at the pool hall, you know. Did you notice where they're taking the pictures? At the pool hall or just outside of the last night where they were getting ready to have over for a beer? And,
well, yeah, the ticket may have a couple of beers or something like that sealed up. But the point is, I think on that, just as many that would test them outside the other way. And,
But they don't put them on. The problem is, of course, that the ones participating in the war, even if they hadn't been in a battle, they'd be bitching. We all have been.
Sure.
Being in a battle, you bitch a hell of a lot more. I mean, particularly if you've seen a lot of the pictures, and particularly if you're led by a clever reporter, you want to remember, too, that if you're looking here at a press corps, first, on our score that $5 is a piece of information, but this, in order to be correspondents in such a difficult place, they have to be young. When you combine the kind of youth that they have to be well educated, the kind of people, young people.
these guys don't wanna travel.
No. They're also, they can't speak D-backs, you could, the other point is this, that just have to realize that, wars, our civil war, our soldiers after Antietam, was a loss. Well, Antietam, of course, was a war, it was a battle, but it was a great turning point of a war. Who the hell knew it? Even Gettysburg was. Gettysburg at the time was not known as a victory. Oh, sure, they charged across that hill, and they mowed down Pickett's people and the rest, but Lee didn't follow up. And so people, after some, what was it? Well, they realized a month or so later, we're in a more difficult situation because it is on the press. The press that is frankly very strongly against the war, most of them in second, whose editors are third. Therefore, feel that that's the way to really report it. And they're going to do it that way. The interest in the facts, of course, is quite limited. I know ISIL was put out there, but it was put out in the Guard direction earlier this week. They put out the pictures with regard to these things. Those are goddamn accurate pictures. Everybody knows that we don't phone up the pictures. We never have. And they don't use them. Because it might help. Just as cold as that. Now what do you do about it? Well, you don't know nothing about the press and all the rest. What you do about it is to keep a sense of perspective. Now, this will pass. Maybe it's going to be very difficult, but it's going to be difficult for a month, 2 months, until the action is finally broken off. But the final analysis, the real question here, is whether it works. We forget too soon that in the 60 days we're in Cambodia, God damn it, we were losing out every day. Not as much as here. They wouldn't report the caches and so forth. We had to go out and practically bludgeon them into it. And the reason was that all of them, 90% of them, predicted it would fail. And so it succeeded. And so it is here. They're somewhat the same kind of thing. It's terribly difficult. The important thing, and I think that the Admiral's briefing point, that the important thing here is to all of us to realize, as we look at it with respect, this is a hard battle as we expect it to be. The important thing, the one question I'm interested in, Lord, is how are they fighting? How are they living? I understand they're fighting extremely well in the Chuck Plantation area, where the odds are much more in their favor. They're fighting reasonably well in this area. Their leadership, perhaps, is, at least in one part, in the airborne, is not as effective as you might like, but the leadership of the 1st Division is good, but they're fighting well. And as far as your prospectus is concerned, you believe the Army, with our air power, has the staying power to stay in and continue to disrupt this area for a period of, shall we say, a few weeks or whatever the case may be. If that occurs, and if they have a wash, and that's all it really amounts to, you realize that by Tuesday, they will have been in there by 3 weeks. Having been in there for 3 weeks, I don't care where they are, they're astride or cutting across at least 3 roads at various times and trails, and been there for 3 weeks. That means there's a hell of a lot of Americans that aren't going to get killed because they were there. It also means that our South Vietnam will have a much better chance to survive next year because they were there. That's what it's all about. We've got to keep this perspective. You're not going to win it in the day-to-day battles with the press. We're going to be flush on that. No way you can win it. All we've got to do is try. And I think that's where you use your big guns. It means to Mel, Bill, and others when you have an opportunity. You just got to sort of stand up there, as we all do. We've done, I think, greatly on it, and present the case. Seems to me that Abrams is a very, I read his briefing. It was he's a totally honest man. He's a more honest man. He gave the bad as well as the good, and said, here's where it's going. And anybody that's met Abrams, he's terribly believable. But even his briefing, though, he had a hell of a time getting through that smog of the press, because so here's Jack.
that, and they show one picture of a disgruntled GI who's had a couple of beers and said, Jesus Christ, this is the worst guy in the world. And now really, now that's what the people remember. But let me come back to this fundamental point. What we have to do is to remember that he is rough. It's going to continue to be the question about comes out. And that's the question, Bill, you remember you asked me at the time. Militarily, will it work? And the point now is, militarily, not only do we think there's a good chance based on their proposition, we weren't sure how they'd fight, and they fought pretty well, right?
Yes, sir.
The second point is that militarily, we're going to do everything we can to our air power to see that it does work. And that's about all we can do. Is that a fair summary of the proposition?
Yes, sir. We got to keep the North Vietnamese from coming along and cutting off our forces. That's a very
cutting off.
He's talking about our
right now.
So
he has a plan to do that. They'll make that.
Well, they'll try to bring artillery down. But of course, we have the we'll be watching that. Of course, we have T-San, which is right here. I did my point, unfortunately. Well, we must.
When do you anticipate that action?
Well, sir, I think they will. They haven't actually committed to that, but we just think that is a threat, and that we have.
That's in South Vietnam, actually.
Yes, sir, that is in South Vietnam.
It would be moving across the DMZ around.
They come around right down from here, sir, from this corner down in this direction here, southeast. But this is being watched very carefully. But I think they might attempt that.
Mr. President, I'd like to submit. I totally agree. We can't control the press, and we can't affect those who are against us. And I think we've done quite well. I think the governors, for example, even ones who were opposed to it yesterday, after the briefing, said that they thought maybe they'd been wrong, even the sergeant from Massachusetts. So I think we're doing pretty well in that sphere. But the thing I was directing my comments to is that the young people and all of the country we own, if we want to try to keep quiet for the next couple of
raising
months.
Talent, that's right.
These statements on television have a hell of an impact on people. And what I was wondering about is whether, rather than issuing any orders or anything of that kind, whether you can't get the leaders of the squadrons themselves by their own choice to say, you know, we're fighting this war in two places. We're fighting it the battlefield, and we're fighting it back at home. And let's not get on television so soon. I mean, if you want to get on television, let's do it at the right time in the right way.
What I'm saying is not
to do it by way of an order. Ellen, you said the skipper of the squadron say that. Don't be interviewed. Let's plan how we're going to be interviewed. Do it in a sensible way. It's part of the war. Probably not too many. Too many squadron leaders, whatever you have out there, maybe they'd be willing to undertake it themselves individually.
Bill, that might make a bigger story.
No, if they do it by the time.
You have to.
What is
very
important?
I want you to know that we're trying to do this. Yeah. This idea that we don't look at this.
Oh, no, I didn't.
It bothers me in the damn thing. And the idea that we're not trying to get people out there on the TV, we are trying to do it. We worked very hard on getting some people out there and making a real thing out of this young man that stayed behind in that helicopter.
Well, that was good.
And that was all programmed very hard. It was a hard sell to get that on. It took us 24 hours to get the first network to carry that. And there was a hell of a lot of work put into that. Now, we don't want people to know how much and how hard we had to work, but that was planned right out of here. And you just got to keep at it all the time, because they don't want those favorable stories. I'm convinced that they don't want the favorable stories from these young men out there right now.
And we have to understand that since the battle of hell, that's if we were in their position. I mean, hell, suppose you were working for CBS, right? You want to go to the top, but you can put out something. You're not going to want New York Hill, no. You're going to pimp for the top guy. That's the way CBS is that way, NBC is that way, and half of ABC. So the networks are impossible. Right? And that's all that matters. The ultimate is bigger.
You know, and Abe has been so good about
Jeff, no, I'm not criticizing.
We're really bragging.
government officials would be smart about it.
And they were in there picturing these guys hanging folks on the other day, and they were, these guys, helicopter pilots, were on a, having a little relaxation, having a couple of beers. You know, they've been out there fighting like hell. They were just having a pretty good time, like you went and done in the wardrobe of that great luxury carrier.
He wasn't, that all went too bad, though. They were far away. He was a pretty good fighter, but the other ones, the ones that ran out, the minute they step out, they're scared as hell, and they just seen their friends killed.
Well, Bill, let me assure you, we recognize the problem. We've talked about it several times. We'll do what we can without
the major way to handle the problem is what's already been suggested. You cannot believe keep them from talking to them because they're looking for the story.
The CBS gave us hell for an hour.
Any one of these, what?
CBS gave us hell for an hour that the Pentagon was trying to manage the news out there. They're going to repeat the program again for 6 to 7 Saturdays.
They've got a bias here. Bias of CBS, and while NBC is generally the worst network as far as administration, CBS on the war is about 10 degrees worse than NBC. That nevertheless, that's because of a bias in the tongue, which everybody understands. The part that we have to realize is the best thing is not a defensive wrench. Give it something else to cover. I mean, have to go run it around. Encourage them to be brave and fly into the Soviet Union. Look, a newspaper man, but everything else, he'd kill his grandmother, or for that matter, his mother, for a good story. So give him a good story, and then he'll get off the bad story. That's about all you can do. Now, I don't mean by that. You can't have the Pentagon doing it. You can't have the Abrams doing it and the rest. Let him go flying around down there in Laos. And I've been in Laos. It's a horrible place. Let him go look at the damn place. That's what you ought to do. Give him more down there. I think that's why your plan now happens to go down there. That gives him another story to write. If it's good, they won't use it. But it's a little bit better than having them there. Keep busy. Can you get 150 helicopters out there to fly 150 press men into Laos?
No, we can't do that.
No, why not?
Tell me about that. Other things to do with the helicopter.
We have to go on to the Mideast now.
Yes, sir.
But I have to know where the Mideast is.
Kind of disposing about what the two peripheral
received from some of his senior associates. But I think we need to look at that possibility. Both sides want us to play a middleman role, and I think we have to look at that possibility as an ongoing matter after we see what occurs in the principal track, namely the negotiations between Egypt and Israel under the auspices of Yari.
But at the moment, Mr. President, that we don't think that's something we should... I just want to say, on that one, we don't think that it's imminent in the sense that we have to do it this week. That's probably down the road just a bit. Something we may want to consider next week, but that's not what faces us today.
On the principal course, Mr. President, the negotiations between the parties. Our view was that for about the first 4 or 6 weeks, the propositions put forward by the Israelis were serious, concrete, non-political. Whereas the UAR papers seemed to be in the opposite direction, rather political, and did not address themselves to the core questions. The new phase, as you know, is that the Egyptians have now been concrete. They have said categorically, we will join in a peace agreement with the Israelis. They have spelled out these peace commitments in a way in which we're sure they're satisfactory. And Golda said before the Egyptians put this forward, that if you are able to get this commitment of a peace agreement, he told this to Wally, she told this to Wally Barber 10 days ago, if you're able to get this spell out, then I will face up to the differences between the United States and Israel on the key question of territories. Now, Yari picked up the ball, and I think it's important, Mr. President, for me to make one point. Yari has not proposed to the Israelis total Israeli withdrawal from all of the territories, because we're seeing a smokescreen at the present time publicly. What Yari has proposed, Mr. President, in specific terms is this. In return for these commitments from the Egyptians that I've described, will you, Israel, withdraw to the international border, provided you are satisfied with respect to demilitarization, and you are satisfied with the security arrangements in and around Sharm el-Sheikh? That's the concrete, specific question that he posed within the context of the Egyptian-Israeli aspect of it. Now, the signs are, as you know, that the Israeli response will not really direct itself to the question of the border. We think the reply will run something along these lines, and it will probably come in the next 24 hours. The Israelis will welcome the new Egyptian move. They will reiterate what they have said over the last 3 years, namely, that they are willing to negotiate on the so-called question of secure and recognized borders. They will then say the 67 borders are barred as a general statement, and we're ready to negotiate. Which, of course, is an evasion of the concrete question which Yari has put. We know that the cabinet, Mr. President, is divided. We've known this for a long time. The only thing they really were able to agree on was this negative statement as to what they were against. They have not been able to define the border. And if this is the reply, undoubtedly, Yari will feel that it is not responsive. And in our judgment, the concern over the extension of the ceasefire on the 7th of March, the concern about whether these negotiations can be continued,
without going into the details, Egypt has accepted in every particular, with very minor exceptions, all the things that Israel said it wants. If in 1967 we could have gotten from Egypt what they are now willing to give, Israel would have been delighted with it. Now, Israel is in the position where it is finally facing a hard decision. It is unwilling to make a decision of any kind. I had a meeting with Ambassador Rabin day before yesterday, and pointed out that if they say what we think they're going to say, it is totally unacceptable and is clearly an attempt to evade their responsibility. What they're going to say is, yes, this was a nice response from Egypt. Yes, it's positive. No, we're not willing to return to the international book. We're willing to negotiate. I've said to Ambassador Rabin, that is an occasion. You have to now say what your position is. It's not enough to say you're willing to negotiate. That's what you're doing. We now have the parties in the position that we've been trying to get them in for 3 years. And you've always said that Egypt is willing to sign a contractual agreement to say that Israel has the right to exist, to sign an agreement with you, to make provision for your security, that you then would lay your cards on the table. You have to do that now. You just can't say, well, we're sometime willing to lay our cards on the table. And if that is their response, the United States is in one hell of a position.
What
secondly, I'd like to say, Mr. I don't know. But they,
what I'm getting at is, what does he say? Does he say that it's
not that they, what they want is...
They have the arms agreement, right. So we've done that.
What else do they want?
Well, what they
wanted to
guarantee,
they don't want
the Russians letting
them out. They don't want to face the decision. Now, what we've said, they said, don't push us. I said, look, we aren't pushing you. We aren't telling you what your position should be. That's up to you. But you have to take a position. You said you've been willing to take a position once you have these assurances. You have them now. It surprised you. This is an area that did not think that Egypt would do this. Egypt has done it now. Now, the thing that's troubling the cabinet in Israel is that they can't decide, they can't take the right decision. They know anything short of the international border doesn't make sense because the Sinai can't, they really have never suggested to be divided. And one other thing before we end this prison, we have to concern. The position that we are now, that we think they should take, is the position that they told us as a government that they were prepared to take in 1967. We have a full account of the meeting between Ivan and Russ. And Ivan told him that once Egypt did these things, that Israel was fully prepared to go back to the international border as long as they had security arrangements on Sharm el-Sheikh. Next, on the record, that's why we supported the Security Council resolution. And the difficulty now is that we will have a major blow off of the whole negotiating process if Israel doesn't at least play their cards, put them on the table. Now, if they put their cards on the table, whatever, in whatever form, at least it's then a negotiating position. Then you have two sides. You've got Egypt saying one thing and Israel saying another. But what Israel is attempting to do, according to the advance information we have, is not to take a position. Now, that is totally unacceptable policy for them to pursue, and they know it. And we say, what do you think the next step is if you do this? They say, well, we'll have to go to the Security Council. How does that help them any? They'll be forced to disclose the hand there. We can't support them if they refuse to say what the position is. Rabin said, well, our position is we want to return to the 1967 border. He said, that's got a position. That's saying what you want to. What will you do? Egypt has told you what it will do. What will you do? Now, that's where we stand, and we don't know what to do. We have other things that we're thinking about.
Well, could I ask? I didn't quite get about the second track. You say that's not the matter that's presently...
Well, we don't want to talk about it. It's not talkable. We can't talk about it with Egypt at the moment because they would think then we're trying to help Israel fail answer. Now, if there's some answer from Israel that's at least positive, obviously Israel isn't going to accept the proposal that's made. But they say, look, we want to return to the 67 quarters, but we will do the following. And then we can say, well, that's going to have to be negotiated out. It's going to take us 6 months or 9 months to negotiate this. Then we can move to this other proposal, go back to the Egyptians and say, look, let's try to work out an opening of the Suez. And if we do that and get some agreement on that, we get an extension of 9 months or a year on the ceasefire. And we'll use this as an interim measure to provide a method of working out a final agreement. But in the absence of that, if Israel does what I'm afraid they're going to do, they aren't going to have any support.
Why do we provide the arms, sir?
Well, I don't think we should until we have.
Well, we can get to work to a method, President.
You can't. We have to be look, as you know, I've taken a very strong position in support of this. I've taken a very strong position with Mrs. Meyer and so forth. And we're going to predict survival. We understand what they have to have. They have to, with regard to the Soviet, we've taken a strong position. They've got to quit messing around over there. That has to be part of the deal with the Soviet. But there's one thing that is in the back here that we have to have in mind, and it must be clearly understood. I've said this to everybody, and everybody should understand it. It is not, of course, it does not go unnoticed that since they're trying to turn around, they've got another campaign coming up, that the two campaigns, it should not go unnoticed too, that all the Democratic candidates, even including our good friend Scoop Jackson, who was such great assistance on ABM, and here, of course, are going completely on the same. Hell with you, support Israel in a war. Now, let's just understand what the position is here. We will support it. We'll provide the arms, we'll provide the long range agreement, we'll guarantee agreement, we'll do it with the Soviet and anything else. But, and we don't say, and we've also indicated that as far as their borders are concerned and the rest, we don't say they go back to the borders before. They must be secure borders. I said that. Defensible borders. That's what we've always talked about. But if there was any thought on the part of any Israeli leaders that they can simply first have their arms, and which the Congress is going to, and then refuse to act, that is, refusing to discuss with the idea that American political. That's what we've got to understand. And I speak as one who has no confidence at all in Soviet intentions and committees, no confidence at all in what the Egyptians are doing. I have a little respect for the King of Jordan. I think if Israel is worth saving, I think we should try to save them the rest. On the other hand, there is not going to be any American political pressure brought to bear on this score because the elections come up the hell with it. So that is, we just simply can't have that. And now, having said that, I think Diane understands that. Certainly Mrs. Meyer seems to understand that she. But what we have to do is to not approach this. And I think it's very important that we're dictating anything, that we're trying to impose anything, that we're trying to nitpick them to death or any of that sort of thing. But we can, on the one hand, simply because the Congress has said we go all out for it, which they have, and give it to $500 million, and because we have indicated we're going to support it, we cannot be in a position where we do that, and then an Israel says, we won't talk. Not just talk, we negotiate. That's what it means.
That's what it means. But we have, because of these negotiations, we've gotten for Israel everything that Israel said it wanted. And the Prime Minister said, if these things are achieved, we will make the hard decisions. We will say what we will do. That's where they are, and that's what they are unable to do. In addition, we have a solemn pledge of their government of what their position was prior to the time we supported the resolution. It's a matter of writing. That's why we voted for the resolution.
Now let me ask
we also, may I say one other, we also told the Arabs that's why we Now, what is Israel prepared to do?
Well, I know this, I think this subject is wrong. It's March 6th, it's arriving in a week. Approximately in a couple of days. Now, March 6th, I noted in my reading news, some reason, requested at that time, ceasefire might be broken. Basically, we wish Israel to move on, or the Arabs don't get what they want, or something like that, but the ceasefire is broken.
Quite possible. We should not start it there. It's going to start. Possible. We, our judgment is that they probably don't want to.
No, and I don't think they will assume that there won't be an extension of the ceasefire.
But they will not,
in a moral sense. I would doubt myself that either side will start the shooting because
you never know.
Never know.
You never know. That's how the War of 67 got
started. They can be quite crazy. So, well, the other way, the more likely way it's going to come, is what we have to do. It's not that the Arabs will start, nobody will know. The Arabs have threat and so forth and so on. And that Israel strikes. Well, I think one thing we have to well understand, the attitude of the Congress, yes, I do. I know what it will be, particularly in the Senate, with your strong support. We well understand this is a bargaining point with Israel. We go all the way.
We lean in that direction, there's no question. We'll maintain the balance in their favor. We keep the Russians out. We will not press them. But if they start anything, then there's no more support.
Now, my God, that's got to be understood.
Mr. President, I may just a political
part. Unfortunately, we have no stroke with the Arabs. We can't keep them from starting something.
I'd just like to make a political comment here, if I could. I agree with Bill if I read his presentation. As I see it is that we have a few days here before this thing gets into the public debate, and I think that once this gets into the public debate and through the Security Council process and through the United Nations, even though the Arabs have done everything we've asked them to do, our maneuvering room publicly is much less than it is privately. And when it gets into the public arena, I think that we're in worse shape. And that's why I think this period of time, this next 2 or 3 days, is so important to keep it out of that public arena there. From our political standpoint.
All right, now people don't do things unless there are some things you can either deny them or give them. Is there anything left to deny or give Israel what they want? Or do they think they're going to get the support of get the 500 million or anything, regardless of what happens?
No, Mr. President, on the arms side, we are committed to certain deliveries coming through June. But the big decision from July 1st on for the next year and a half, you have not made. And I think our general feeling around this table would be to withhold making that particular decision because they know the time is approaching. Now, there are certain lead time problems and so on.
Well, they know also that I will lean toward a very generous settlement, provided that there is some quick rule. But I'll tell you, you just can't continue to say, all right, give Israel everything it wants, and then be in a position where Israel, and they're putting the name on, and some of them know this, they do nothing in return. That's our real problem. We're talking just here in the room about this. These are highly confidential information that we doesn't realize. As Mel says, this gets in the public arena, you'll see the tremendous number of speeches being made up there in the Senate floor on that.
President, one point on that, sir. The New York Times, Charlie Yost, has been very understanding and lately and felt that Israel was dragging its feet. So this could affect our political situation.
No, they've been consistently supportive on it.
Yeah,
and I don't think we have to, and we don't have to be apologetic in the slightest degree about the position that I've announced here. In fact, Israel, when we talked to Bastard and his associates, he's quite embarrassed. He doesn't have a position.
My point, sir, was if you decide to have a little stick on it, it seems to me that we might get less political flack and more support just because of this one factor in that major news media. And I don't know if you can do it publicly, I mean.
Well, I would like to suggest to maybe that we not take any action with Google or change our decision.
That was all correct
at the moment.
I'm just indicating.
At the moment.
Let me put it this way.
We don't want any threats. We don't want any clubs or any of that sort of thing. I think I'm just suggesting the other side of the coin. There must not be any assumption among those of us here that I, who have been the best friend, most reliable friend that anyone's had in this chair for a hell of a long time, because we've been willing to step down in the conflict, that regardless of what happens, we're going to help. We sure as hell will not. That's what we have to understand. Because we have not. Otherwise, you create a situation where they're doing the council. Now, that doesn't say a thing about, unfortunately, I would say exactly the same thing about the Egyptians. If we had a stroke with them, we don't have it.
They've been behaving pretty well, though, that's the thing.
Mr. President, you go in there every day and you come up with a new set of requests and new wrinkles developed. Yesterday was no exception. In fact, he had apparently